Welcome everyone to the Top Producer Podcast. This is Paul Neifer, your host, and today we're going to have a conversation with Evan Shout from Saskatchewan, Canada. So Evan, well, we always have to ask, how's the weather up there?
We're finally starting to get a little snow up here, so it almost feels like winter all of a sudden.
How'd that happen? I mean, in a typical winter, how much snow would you typically end up getting?
Oh, we'd have a few feet by now. I mean, this is probably the only second time in my life I can remember not having a white Christmas. So it's an anomaly right now, and we're just starting to feel a bit of what winter should have felt like 2 months ago.
Well, we probably could have given you some of ours. We've had, I think we've had three separate snowfalls at my house of at least 10 to 12, maybe 14 inches. But luckily, we're in Colorado, and 3 days later, it's 65 degrees and it melts. So that hasn't been too bad. But like all these podcasts that I try to do, I always like to start off with background. And again, for the listeners out here, I think Evan is my second Canadian that I've had the podcast. And the first one was your partner, Christian. So let's go ahead and start with your background.
Sure. So I grew up small town kid, farm, middle of Saskatchewan, Canada, about 4,000 acres, cereals, pulse, oilseed. Got told there was no money in farming, so decided to go to university, get my CPA, went through public accounting for about 10 years and didn't listen, and went back and threw my hat in the race on farming again. Go ahead.
I was going to say, is it a CPA in Canada or is it a CA? Didn't it used to be a CA or has it always been a CPA?
Used to be CA, now it's CPA. They joined all three of them. So
okay. Because I knew you had mentioned that a couple times, and I was like, well, I thought it was a CA. Of course, I'm such an old fart that, you know, it could have been back in the dark ages. It could have been like an SCD or something, but who knows? But so you were a CPA for how long?
I was about 10 years with a public accounting firm up here in Canada, and then went back to the family farm and took over in about 2010. 2013, had our first child, and honestly got a diagnosis of autism, and rural Saskatchewan, not the greatest place for special needs. So took the choice and went back to MNP for a few more years before obviously the role I'm in now.
Okay. And you said MPP or M, what is it again for the CPA firm?
The accounting firm's MNP. It's one of the larger agriculture firms in Canada.
Okay. So it's probably primarily based in the ag provinces in Canada?
Yeah, they moved out east a little bit a while ago, but most of it was, it started off as a medium-sized firm in Western Canada.
Okay. And so, well, let's then dive into what are you doing right now?
So in 2019, I got a job offer from a very close friend of mine for about 20 years, Christian Hebert, and it was primarily to take over the CFO role on his 30,000 acre grain farm in Southeast Saskatchewan. That has now turned into about three other businesses that we now run alongside the farm, a consulting business, an insurance business, as well as an executive coaching business up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Okay, so let's start with the farm, and then we'll probably dig a little bit into each of the other businesses. So is it still about 30,000 acres, or is it expanded from there?
The estimate for this year is we'll probably put in just under 40,000 cultivated acres. It's we're starting to see opportunities, I guess, which is good for agriculture, but probably unexpected in these times with high interest rates and a little tighter margins going into next year.
Yeah, sucks up some cash, and like you say, that cash is a little bit more expensive than it used to be. So now, is your rotation, you know, again, for the most of the listeners on here are going to be U.S. farmers. Some of them maybe understand what you grow in Canada, but explain for the listeners there what type of rotation that you guys typically do.
So for the last couple of years, it's been canola, wheat, and barley primarily. We have done pulse in the past as well as some fall rye. But I think for next year, we're looking at strictly those three crops, just based on A, where the markets are, and B, kind of where the crop rotation's fallen for 2024.
And canola, they use it primarily for oil, but then there is some feed byproduct, or what do they primarily use canola for?
So the majority of our crop obviously goes into the crush and the oil content. There's not a lot of feed coming through our farm. But it is another option. And then obviously they're looking into the aviation fuel and other other green alternatives, I guess, would be the future, I think.
Yeah, you know, I've done a couple podcasts on SAF for the tax credits down here and, you know, Canada. I think eventually it may end up where the regulators, whether it's the U.S. government, the Canadian government, or the state or provinces, may say, hey, if you want to fly, we're going to mandate that you use SAF. And at that point, you know, primarily that's going to be coming from canola, ethanol, soybean, whatever it might be. But we're still a few years down the road from that. But I could certainly see that happening.
Yeah, it's obviously part of the green initiative. And I'm with you. I could see it happening in the future, but I still think we're quite a ways away from seeing that. So for us, it's mostly the local crush plants where a lot of our supply goes.
And do you have any winter wheat or winter barley, or is it all spring type crops?
For us, it's mostly spring type crops. Obviously, there's lots of winter wheat in Saskatchewan. It's just for us, based on rotation and based on our efficiencies in the spring, the only fall crop we usually put in is a little bit of rye, if it so works.
See, where I grew up, rye was a nasty three-letter word, because that means it was a weed out in my wheat field, and my dad made me go pull it in the summer when it was 105 degrees. So I didn't really like rye growing up.
Well, I'm not a beer drinker, so I was more towards growing rye than barley these days. So,
Do you expect to continue growing, or is it we're happy where we're at? Or like you say, there's so many opportunities probably coming up that it's going to force you to grow, or do you, well, I guess, what's your strategic plan right now?
But to tell you the truth, Paul, and I'm not sure how much Christian shared with you back when you talked to him, for us, it's never been about the acres. It's growth has allowed us to really build a strong team. And I mean, that's on all sides of the business. So it's usually the people that have dictated whether or not we wanted to grow in acres. And then obviously the opportunities as land prices are moving, it's getting harder and harder. But we're also having a lot more elder farmers and the age of the average farmers going up. So I think the opportunities are going to keep continuing. It's just how much can we take and what kind of capital is it going to require?
And do you have enough people, the right people on the bus, so to speak, to handle it? So
Yeah. And for us, that's probably one of our biggest. I mean, when we talk risks on the farm, other than policy, probably HR is our second biggest risk, just making sure that the rural towns stay and that we have a supply of good labor.
And maybe for the listeners, you know, because Saskatchewan, if it was in the United States, would probably be the third largest state after Alaska and Texas, because I think you're 150,000 square miles, plus or minus. Whereabouts in Saskatchewan versus maybe the U.S. border, whereabouts is your operation?
We're give or take about an hour north of Minot. So we're not far over the border, and then we're pretty close to the Manitoba border as well. So we're kind of hidden down in the far southeast corner.
Okay. Anything else on the farm that you want to go over?
I don't think, I mean, obviously with where things are with the margins and crop prices and a few other things, I think our strategy for this year was more based on controlling costs and making sure we can market at the right times. And honestly, we've been a little drier up here the last few years. So just making sure that we make the right decisions at the right times, obviously, especially in a growth mode right now, that those would be the main aspects we're probably looking at, I think.
Yeah, I think for the farmers out there, you know, definitely margins are going to be tighter in the 24 crop. You know, I'm hoping on my crop, because I'm technically not a farmer. I'm a crop share landlord, but I feel like I'm a farmer. I'm hoping we get a nice little spring rally, you know, get that extra 40 or 50 cents in corn and maybe a buck in beans and a buck in wheat or something. And I can, you know, make a little money this year. But certainly the last couple of years have been fairly profitable. Well, let's and we may come back to the farm a little bit, but I know you have some other business ventures. Start with the first one you want to go over, what it might be, and so on and so forth.
So we'll probably start with the coaching business, Paul. And I think that's, I mean, you and I crossed paths down in Phoenix a few weeks ago as part of the public speaking we do. And it's tied back to, we started in July of 21, an executive coaching program for farms up here in Saskatoon. And it was based on Western Canada, but we obviously drew a few farms from south of the border as well. So it's essentially a program based kind of around the thoughts of TPAP out of the U.S. just for the education component. And then a little bit of strategy and entrepreneurism on the, obviously the operators and the owners of these farms. So it's kind of running it like a business instead of a lifestyle. So that's probably the first one that we launched that we're knee deep in right now.
Is that based a little bit on EOS or is it separate from that?
It's kind of a combination. So the theory around it obviously comes strong from EOS because that's one that we've implemented on the farm and really liked it. It's a model of it, but not necessarily the EOS model itself, just to fit agriculture. And then Christian and I are both part of a strategic coach course in Toronto that we go to for entrepreneurs. And it works on a lot of mindset thoughts and tools. And obviously we don't utilize those in the course because there's trademarks, but for us, it's how do we get the primary producers to start thinking more like entrepreneurs and business owners and kind of less like the old farming mantra of, you know, we've always done it this way, so that's the way we got to keep doing it. So it's kind of pushing guys outside their comfort zone and making them think strategic and bigger.
Does that appeal? So let's say we got a dad that's in their 50s, early 60s, and then you got maybe a son or two sons or a son and a daughter that are in their late 20s, early 30s. Is that appealing more to that younger generation than the older generation, or is it just depend on the family?
I would say a little bit of both. So the average age is probably in that low 40s range, but okay. We do have some producers that have sent their kids the next level that might be in that 20 to 25 range. And then we also have the elder farmers that actually have come with family members so that they can work through some of those business aspects that maybe haven't been built and they want to get them in place before the succession or transition begins. It's a bit of everything. And I mean, even from male to female, we've got lots of strong female producers in the program. And geographically, as I said, we kind of expected Saskatchewan was going to be the main farmers in the program. And they were only about 50% as we pulled from all the Western provinces. And then we also had four or five that come up three times a year from the US. So,
okay. And so maybe just for the listeners out there, what type of curriculum, how long of a course is it? Maybe let's just dive into a little bit more details just so maybe there's some listeners that would be very interested in it.
Yeah. So from the executive coaching standpoint, it's a program that I want you to be in it for 20 years. So it doesn't continue with the education components, but the executive coaching part of it is lifelong. So some of the curriculum we'll touch on is just, you know, long-term planning, things that many farms don't have down on paper, whether it's what's 10 years look like and what's the success definition of your farm. The other aspects are then built on, you know, finance, cash flow, human resources. The joke we always say is we sat down to create a curriculum and we have about 10 years worth of information on a whiteboard. So we're not short on content. That was easy in the agriculture industry, obviously.
Yep.
But it's getting the guys to buy into the mindset. And our first year we had retention of about 90%. So for us, that's the victory, is that guys saw the value, stayed in it. And it kind of ties them into accountability, because every time they come back, they're going to be with the same group. They've set goals for the next quarter. What did they achieve? And what did some of the other people in the program with them achieve? It's kind of a motivational tool at times.
So sounds similar to a peer group, but it's not a peer group, or how would it be different maybe from a US peer group?
So compared to the peer groups that I've been part of, this one's got a little more accountability. So it's more working on the long-term vision of your farm and a little less, you know, group thought, which I think comes out of a peer group where you got that one question and everybody's kind of got an answer and that's how you learn.
Yeah.
With this one, we've got more of a mediator or a coach. And it's about pushing each of the members to create their own road to success rather than have other people tell them what they've done. And then obviously on the education side, it's built a little bit like TPAP. So it's more, here's an instructional of, you know, what are you doing for financial statements, accrual, cash, HR, building the career for your employees, a little bit of everything.
So that's an in-person meeting. Is that a week meeting? Is it a 2-3 day meeting? How is that handled?
So we run it three times a year and okay. Obviously based on the growing season. So, I mean, for most of the Canadian producers, it runs November, March, and July.
Yep.
And it's a day and a half each session and it gives you enough time to learn, but not enough time to, you know, sit back and get pulled back into operations. So you get that day and a half off the farm. working on the business rather than in it.
Yeah.
And then you go, you come back the next quarter and we see how far you've gotten.
And if you really could be, you know, autocratic about it, when they walk in the door, you grab their cell phone so nobody can get a hold of them for a day and a half. But that might be a step too far for most farmers.
Yeah, that one's a hard push just based on how many phone calls I know I get per day and I know Christian gets. So that one might be a fight on my hands if I tried that.
It'd be like those videos of students in the US when the teacher takes the phone away and they end up beating the teacher up. So might not be quite that bad. So that's the executive coaching, again, focused on farmers. About how many people would be in a typical session then?
So we try to build it between that 20 and 25. So enough that there's a group at your table that you're going to have discussions. You're going to go over topics, but not too many that you can't have the big group discussions. Because I find if you get too large, you can't have enough voices in the room. So
yeah,
we try to keep it at a certain size, and we're running four different cohorts right now. So we've kind of topped out where we are, and we're going to launch a few more this November. So that's the plan.
Okay. And then, you know, from a, I guess, a financial standpoint, what is a typical annual cost for these growers? What would that be?
So for the signature or the main program, it's about $5,000 for the year. And that obviously brings you in for a day and a half, three times a year, covers the tuition, covers your meals for those days, accommodations and lodging are on up to you guys to book.
Yep. And is that $5,000 Canadian?
I knew you were going with that. At the moment, yes, it's 5,000 Canadian. Now, is it going to stay there if we get enough U.S. interest? I can't promise that because we all know where the dollar is today. So
sign me up now. Yes.
You know,
so,
yeah.
Good. So that's the strategic coaching. And what's your next business?
So I guess the initial one that started was when I took over the CFO role for HGV. We kind of identified that it wasn't really a full-time job. I had enough assistance already built into the business that I wasn't required every single day. So we'd opened up what we call Maverick Ag, which is our consulting business. And we took on a few very large scale grain farms and obviously cattle and diversified as well. And we do internal CFO consulting with them.
Okay.
That one has grown over the last few years. So I've brought in a few associates to take over some of the financial side of it. And I kind of get to be the guy who sits in the meetings and just talks big picture now. So I've built it so I get to have more fun these days.
Yep.
But that's the consulting side of the business.
Now, I know in the US, there are certainly many, many farms out there that they're too big for handling all the accounting and the CFO themselves, but they're not big enough to have a full-time CFO. So that's really sort of what the role of this entity is to help them, you know, maybe not necessarily do all the accounting, but, or maybe share with the listeners out there what a part-time CFO might involve.
Yeah. So it's exactly like you said, it's a fractional CFO. So you don't have to have one full-time internally. And it's more built around less of the day-to-day bookkeeping and accounting needs and more of the large scale, you know, annual projections, running benchmarks, going through equipment deals, land deals, budget to actuals throughout the year, fall updates. It's kind of the tracking of the big picture numbers so that all the key ratios and all that fall in line throughout the year. And it just allows farmers, instead of the usual, you get your statements 4 months after year end and you figure out, did we make money or not?
That you know.
Yeah, it allows guys throughout the year before they make their fall decisions to actually know where they're going to end up.
Now, do you do those services only for Canadians or do you do it for some U.S. farmers?
Right now, it's strictly Canadian. And part of the problem, Paul, is that there's large economies of scale with that service line there. The need is of CPAs, obviously my time as well as my associates' time. So it's hard to take on a large scale of producers.
Yep.
So that's part of why we launched the executive coaching was it gives producers the ability to come up, take what they learn and go back and implement it themselves rather than me trying to help everybody one-on-one, which it just, you outgrow it really fast.
Yeah. You only have so many hours in the day of Evan's time. So exactly. Bet. And then was there another business that you have?
So we also, obviously, Christian and I are quite involved with the private insurance industry up here in Canada. So we also do a little bit, we're actually an insurance brokerage. So we do a little bit of private insurance sales, but it's not an arm that is a big focus for us, but it does allow us to find products that work for our clients as well as obviously our acquaintances and networks, and build it around the government programs as well so that they can risk mitigate as much as they can going into these tighter years. So that would be the third service line.
So on the insurance, again, for the US listeners, they all understand revenue protection. Some of them maybe have used whole farm, others maybe margin protection, which those are all, you know, based on RMA or, you know, the USDA, a government program. Yep. What is the insurance options in Canada, both maybe government versus private? Because it seems like you use more private up there than we do down here, if I have that right.
Yeah, so the government options are kind of split into the provincial crop insurance programs, which are yield-based. So obviously no price insurance, but you do get yield guarantees year over year based on historics. They also have a growing forward program, which includes an agri-stability program, which is more kind of your revenue margin insurance, okay, much like the U.S. The problem is that those two programs work against each other. So if you're collecting a large amount from the province on the provincial government insurance, it mitigates how much you can get out of the federal program.
Yep.
So the private program that we work with it's a margin insurance, just like what you guys would have down there, but it's built around working with the other programs so that they don't cannibalize one another. And I mean, the other option is if the yield insurance from the government isn't strong enough for your farm, there is an option with just taking private insurance as whole farm on its own, and it'll give you the protection on both the price and the yield. So there's a few different options in Canada. It's just some are private for you guys. Most of it's through the government.
Yeah. Now the private obviously wouldn't be subsidized. Does the government subsidize both at the province and the federal level?
Yeah. The government programs are highly subsidized, which obviously makes the private sale a little harder. Now, when times get a little tighter, obviously costs are up. Guys look to both kind of to use in combination in order to cover their cost of production, but the pricing is definitely much different between the private and the government side.
Yeah, you know, we have the same issue down here with like margin. If you do both margin and revenue protection, you know, there's times when that revenue protection sort of cannibalizes the benefit of the margin and vice versa. So it is a little interesting down here. I'm trying to remember the last time I talked to a farmer that has strictly yield. I mean, we do have the yield down here, but seems like 90% of at least the corn and soybean and wheat farmers that I know of and my tenant farmers and so on, we're all RP. So that just seems like that's the standard down here. Not always, but that seems to be the standard.
Yeah, we're up here, I would say we're probably exact opposite of you, where 90% have the yield insurance offered just because of the subsidies and the lower premiums. And the ones who need the revenue insurance or see the benefit in the pricing insurance, they're the ones who go private.
Now, in their yield, so let's say that you have a 10 bushel, you know, deficit or claim on wheat. How do they set the price per bushel then? Is that still based on some type of average futures like it is down here, or how's that price set?
So the pricing for those programs, and it's province by province, so there's not one hard set rule, but that what they'll do is, for example, SCIC will take a January price for that year, and that's the price set. So by March, we know the exact price for the grains going forward. So it is a fixed price. It's not across the entire year. So some years it can be really good, and some years it can be really bad depending when the price hikes go in the market.
Yep. I can tell you last year was really good. This year, not so much. Is that a fairly accurate statement?
That is 100% accurate statement.
Yeah, I think, you know, our soft white wheat price for the 22 crop was $9.56, if I remember right. And this year it's $7.26 or something. You know, I can't remember. I can look it up, but it's pretty close. So, you know, $2.50 drop, that's pretty material.
Yeah. And for us, I mean, canola came in last year extremely high in the 18s, and we're probably looking at somewhere in the low 14s this year. So we're looking at a significant drop in coverage levels across most of Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true in the US because we still haven't, you know, well, corn was down another, what, 6, 8, 10 cents today in the US, and it was at 474 on the average for February. because that's how we set our price down here. That means it's down, you know, if it dropped 10 cents, that's drop another 2 cents. So we're probably 472 today. And last year, you know, we were 590 something. So it's going to be down quite a bit. So you're not going to be locking in a profit utilizing crop insurance this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a different, I guess, thought process than the last couple of years where we could lock in profits with insurance. Now this year to do it, you're going to be looking at multiple programs in order to get back to that break even, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Your marketing plan is going to be more important. Well, Chris, I mean, I almost called you Christian. So, yeah, Evan, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor message, and we'll come back. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions about the farm, and then we'll always end with my 4 or 5 key questions I have for you.
How many years away is the long run for a farmer? 5 years? 10 years? Top producers like Hans Reinschi, a Blue Diamond farming company in Jessup, Iowa, know RoboAgri Finance shares his enduring vision for the future.
Whether it's I'm building our grain site, or if it's purchasing the next field, we're able to turn to Robo as a trusted partner to help us get financing to make those generational decisions.
With unmatched financial capacity, local relationship managers, and a global network of sector experts to offer market guidance, RoboAgri Finance provides enterprising farmers with a personalized approach to lending and financial services. Growing a better world together, RoboAgri Finance.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Top Producer Podcast. This is Paul Neef, your host, and we're going to rejoin our conversation with Evan Shout from Saskatchewan, Canada. So, Evan, we had started with the farm, and then we moved into your other ventures. But the one thing that I forgot to ask you about, because you originally started with Christian's operation as strictly CFO, but I think, don't you have some ownership now, or how has that evolved?
Yeah, so we're one of the few farms, I think, in probably Canada and the U.S. where I do have some private ownership of the operating partnership. So as part of me coming across and leaving obviously a good public accounting job, there has to be more than just a salary. I was looking for a way to participate in some of the earnings and have some risk on my side as well. So Christian knew kind of how to bring in individuals because our COO also has some ownership. And it was a way to get us to come across, even though we had other, you know, well-paying good jobs, and to take a chance on what we could grow here.
Has there been any major bumps in the roads on that, or has that worked out pretty well so far? Or I'm just curious, because it's only been, a few years probably, but how has it gone so far?
Yeah, so I started in 2019, and I mean, as with anything, when you create the wheel, you're going to come across a few things throughout the time here, but honestly, nothing major. And it's been more of a learning process, feeling each other out and knowing what everybody's expectations are and what way we want to drive forward. So for us, we're all on the leadership committee as part of the EOS system. We all have a good say in what happens on the farm and the vision and the future. So we're all kind of on this, as you mentioned earlier, all on the same bus. And that has made it quite easy. And the ownership percentages, as we grow and as we expand, it means more risk and more reward for us. So it keeps it exciting, to tell you the truth.
Well, and knowing Christian as little as I do, I'm guessing that he probably comes up with 100 ideas in a month, and then you have to weed out down to maybe the one that might work.
Yeah, so we always laugh because if you've ever known what the Colby Index, him and our COO are both what we call quick starts, which is a lot of great ideas real quick, not a whole bunch of implementation and build behind it. And I'm the exact opposite, which I think is why it works so well, is I get the ideas, I decipher which ones work, which ones don't, and then I build the final product and he gets the final, the final say on some of the capital and some of the other items. So it works well because we're not the exact same person. And we kind of knew that going in.
Yeah. Yeah. You need both. And probably knowing my personality, I'm probably a little bit, I mean, I am a CPA. I'm a little bit anal, but I'm probably a little bit more like Christian. I mean, hey, let's do this. And if it doesn't work, we'll figure something else out. So, as I've gotten older, maybe I've gotten a little less, I'm still pretty much a risk taker. So, anything else before I go into asking my final questions?
I don't think so a lot, Paul. I mean, we talked about the growth and we've talked about kind of what 2024 looks like. So, I mean, we've covered the main aspects of the farm and now in Saskatchewan, we just need a little bit of spring rains as you kind of mentioned. So,
yeah. And actually our wheat crop in Washington State last year, major drought, it was down 30-40% from APH. This year, the wheat crop is looking wonderful. So, you know, good. As long as we get rain between now and at least, you know, mid to late May, early June, maybe my field might hit 160 bushels this year. At least I can hope, you know, in a good year it's 145, 150. So we'll see. As far as marketing, you have the crop insurance. Do you guys take advantage of futures, or is there any interesting marketing tools that you use up in Canada that we might not have down here?
So for the marketing at HGV, it's actually our COO that does the majority of the work. And Christian stole him from Viterra. He was part of their marketing group as well as running a few elevators up here. So that's more his skill set than mine. But essentially, once we know our cost of production, we figure out exactly what, you know, what the return is we're looking for the year. And we're not one of the ones where we'll hold and wait for the high. It's more built on the Dave Cole theory of step selling, sell to a profit.
Yep.
So I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to go back 6 months and sell every bushel of canola we had in the bins, but that's hindsight's 2020.
Yep.
But for us, there is no, let's call it marketing plan, but it is based on numbers and it's based on theory and having those hard cost of production numbers in front of us.
Well, good. Okay. So now I'm going to ask a couple questions. Who was your mentor in this process over the last decade or two?
So I'm probably going to give you a few. So I grew up in the times of, you know, Dick Whitman and Danny Kleinfelter out of the US. And I've obviously read almost everything they've written. And I've been part of Dick Whitman's classes throughout the last few years. So those would be my main two for the theory part of it. But up in Canada, obviously Christian was one of my mentors when I came across. You leave public accounting, you don't have a lot of internal operational background and experience. So learning from him has been, you know, really, really fun and a good thing for my career, I would say, over the last few years. And then obviously a few partners at MNP when I was there. I wouldn't be where I was without them, but I've got more than one, but I don't want to give you a laundry list. So,
Okay. And then I know you got kids, you're working in three or four businesses, but do you have any time for hobbies?
Probably my number one is fitness. When I left the farm, I was a lot of stress, out of shape. And when I came back to the accounting firm and with the kids and stuff, I kind of turned into a bit of a fitness jockey, let's call it, just trying to get back in shape and save some of my youth. So that's probably, if you asked anybody else, what my main hobby is these days.
What, lifting weights or running or aerobics or what would be your primary fitness routine?
You're not going to catch me running anytime soon, Paul. Trust me. So more weightlifting and being in the gym and that community, I guess it's always been a fit for myself as well as my wife. So,
well, I played 2 hours of pickleball last night. I got 2 hours coming up tonight and a couple more hours tomorrow night. So that's probably how I get my fitness in. And plus when I go golfing, even if I ride in a cart, as long as I'm not the driver of the cart, I try to walk as much as I can. And typically, you know, I can get close to 7 or 8 miles in walking on, at least if the Apple app is correct, it'll tell me I have 14 or 15,000 steps in, and you know, that's a decent number of steps.
Gotcha.
So, is there anything that keeps you up at night?
You know, these days, and maybe it's because I'm not the main primary owner of the farm. I don't lose a lot of sleep these days, Paul. It's obviously there's risks with being an entrepreneur like we are and startup businesses and all this stuff. But agriculture, I think, has shown the last few years to be pretty resilient. I mean, we came through the pandemic. We're almost recession proof, I would say. And I don't want to say that too loud, but for me, I'm pretty happy where I am, and I don't lose a lot of sleep at night these days.
Well, good. I typically go to sleep pretty good too. So is there, or what would be your definition of success in farming?
Good question. What is the definition? I think just to make our mark. And I mean, I don't say that from an ego perspective, but from a both Christian and I are highly involved in the industry, and we do a lot of public speaking and get out there. And I honestly love doing the education sessions and the coaching side of it, and just being around farmers and providing guidance. So for me, that's the success number. It's not a money number, it's not an acre number. It's how much I can have an impact on this industry and give back, because it's given me a lot.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, that's I think you and I each share the same passion for farming, and not just the dirt, it's the people, it's helping them be successful. And that's I think what gives both you and I some value.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, again, Chris, I almost said it again, Evan, thank you. Thank you. I mean, sorry about that. But thanks for being on the podcast. I think maybe 6 months, a year from now, maybe we'll have another one just to catch up and see how 24 ended up.
Sounds good, Paul.
Okay. Again, this is the Farm CPA, or excuse me, for the people out there, it's the Top Producer Podcast. That's the first time I've done that. So this is the Top Producer Podcast, and this is Paul Neifer, your host, signing off.